Hi folks, Bob Main here, and welcome to the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thank you for tuning in. This is episode 11, and I want to first of all thank you for listening to me talk about one of my very favorite subjects, one of my very favorite pastimes, and also a way of life for me, and that is carrying, concealing, and shooting firearms, specifically handguns. And that's why I call this the Handgun World Show, because we talk about these little beauties that save lives, which is part of today's show, Saving Lives. I'm also going to talk a little bit about a specific type of gun. I'm just going to spend a little bit of time on a specific type of gun. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about long guns today, shotguns and rifles. And I'm going to give you a little bit of my opinion on what I think of shotguns and rifles. Should you own them? Should you not own them? What circumstances? How would they be used? What type should you have? Etc., etc. Again, this show has some of my opinion in it. I also lace it with a pretty fair amount of facts. So I draw my own conclusions from facts as I research them, and then I ultimately let you make the decision, because this show is about you and how you feel about handguns and firearms in particular. So again, this is your show. You draw your own conclusions. I'm not going to force anything upon you. I'm just going to present some facts as I see it, let you know how I see it, and then let you take it from there. We're going to talk a little bit about a book that was written approximately 10 years ago called More Guns, Less Crime. And there are still a lot of concepts in that book by John Lott that still apply today. So More Guns, Less Crime. Some people have that backwards. Some people think that fewer guns will lessen the crime rate, but it's actually more guns. And I'm going to throw some facts out there for you to consider on that. And then we're going to talk about the Walther PPS, a new gun that hit the scene, I think, about a year and a half, 2 years ago or so. The Walther PPS, fabulous little pistol by a very well-known manufacturer, Walther. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And then as we wrap up the show today, I'd like to discuss specifically shotguns and rifles. So I'll take a little bit of a departure from handguns, and we'll talk about the long guns. All right, so before diving in to all that, couple of brief announcements. Obviously, if you did not find us on our website, it's www.handgunworld.com. You might have found us by cruising through iTunes or some of the other podcast directories. So www.handgunworld.com. This is the Handgun World Show. We're a subsidiary of today's survival show. I do a show about two or three times a week on survivalism, which sometimes includes some firearm podcasts. But this one here, this show, is strictly dedicated only to guns. And Second Amendment and facts and upholding our Second Amendment rights. So you've come to the right place if you just want to talk guns for a while, because that's what you're going to get from me here on this show. But if you want to check out how to become more self-sufficient and self-reliant and live a more peaceful life, then you might want to check out todayssurvival.com as well. And the other announcement that I want to make is I am looking for advertisers. We've got a pretty fair amount of subscribers to the show. There's a lot of people who subscribe to this show or who listen to this show that do not actually subscribe using a podcatcher software or an RSS reader. I've got about 800 total downloads approximately since I did this show. So I'm looking for advertisers. I'm going to do a lot of screening and make sure that the advertisers that are on this show are not, that are real good, legitimate companies that have something good to offer. But if you are interested in advertising on this show, and even today's survival show, if you'd like, contact me. On the contact page of this blog, you'll find my email. Send me a message, or if you know somebody that'd like to do some advertising, I'll probably work out a pretty equitable arrangement with you at first as we get things going. So I think you use a lot of benefits. So again, we are open to that, and you'll be a sponsor. And typically what I do with the sponsors is I typically give you some airplay. I talk about your offerings for about 60 seconds or so on each of these podcasts. So you get exposure both through these podcasts and also through the blog. So consider that, or if you know somebody, have them contact me. All right, and with that, let's go ahead and dive into the first subject, more guns, less crime. There was an article, now this goes back to 1998. Why do I bring this up now in 2009? Well, I got a belief, folks, and the belief is that the old is forever new. You know, things change a little bit when it comes to firearms, but, yeah, really not much. I mean, the design of firearms changes, and technology seems to improve and improve, but the concept, especially this concept, more guns causing less crime, this just doesn't seem to change. And John Lott wrote this book, and I want to talk to you about an interview that was done with Mr. Lott about this book, and I'm going to give you a little bit of my take on it, how I see it, and throw a little bit of my flavor in it, but a lot of this is going to be pulled straight from the article. So, the interviewer, obviously, I want you to picture this, is interviewing John about his book, and that he wrote in 98, I believe, and the first question out of the box, they asked him, what does the title mean by more guns, less crime? And Mr. Lott says, well, states with the largest increases in gun ownership have the largest drop in violent crimes. Now, I covered this on one of my other shows. And I think now we've got about 36 or 37 states in the United States that issue what we call a shall issue concealed carry permit. Shall issue means that if you meet the requirements, typically the background check, the required amount of class hours of lecture that you have to sit through, and the shooting requirements, the state shall issue you a concealed carry permit. Now, there are some states called may issue. In other words, it's their discretion. They can give you the permit if they want, and they don't have to if they don't want to. And then there are some that just don't issue them at all. I think we're down to just only two states now that don't give citizens the right to carry. One of them, unfortunately, is my home state of Wisconsin. And hope those people fix things up there. But anyway, I live in Texas now, which is, as many of you know, a very gun-friendly state. But the shall issue states means that that government, the state government, has to give you your permit if you meet the requirements. They have no choice. Now, they can sometimes take the maximum amount of time. In most states, they have 90 days with which to issue you your permit. And unfortunately, because of the backlog and the popularity of concealed carry, a lot of them are taking their jolly old time, and they're sending it out on the 89th day. But if you are in a shall-issue state, you will get it if you meet the minimum requirements. So again, I think we're at about 36 or 37 states now. And if you wonder whether your state is one of those, go to handgunlaw.us. That's a great website, handgunlaw.us. Anyway, that's what Mr. Lott says, is that most of them now that have shall-issue laws, the crime has significantly gone down. Now, what a shall-issue state, by the way, according to John's definition, is that it allows adults the right to carry a concealed handgun if they do not have a criminal record or a history of significant mental illness. And, of course, like I mentioned, you got to take the required class, and you have to show some shooting proficiency with your firearm. Now, here's a little bit of my opinion. I think a lot of states don't require individuals to show enough shooting proficiency. And so I want to strongly recommend to you that once you meet your state's minimum requirements, go get some training. Go take a training course where a certified instructor is going to put you through at least a half a day, preferably a day worth of what we call tactical shooting and learning how to safely handle your weapon, holster it, unholster it, the proper way to load it, the proper way to safely fire it, showing some proficiency with it, shooting 150 to 200 rounds during that time frame, really polishing your skills. Folks, there is no substitute for training. A gun in the hands of an untrained shooter, in my humble opinion, is far more dangerous than a gun in the hands of somebody that's had some training. Sorry there, folks. I'm doing this podcast while I'm driving. I got a little bit distracted there because some joker cut me off here on the freeway. I am taking advantage of a little bit of windshield time here as I drive on a business trip to talk about the Handgun World Show. So again, sorry a little bit there for the distraction. All right, and so the next point that I want to cover, this interviewer is a trip. Because this person goes on to ask this question. It just seems to defy common sense that crimes likely to involve guns would be reduced by allowing more people to have guns. How do you explain these results? And John Lott says, well, he says, you know, criminals are deterred by higher penalties. Duh! Gosh, you know, I can't figure out what is it so difficult for gun haters to understand that these things are deterrents. I mean, they're just flat-out deterrents to the vast majority of criminals out there. What part of that is difficult? Anyway, John, Mr. Lott says, just as higher arrest and higher conviction rates deter crime, so does the risk that someone committing a crime may get themselves shot. He said there's a strong negative relationship between the number of law-abiding, and now those are two key words there, law-abiding citizens with permits and the crime rate. As more people obtain permits, there's a greater decline in violent crime rates. And here is something interesting. He says that, this I'd never heard before, actually. He said, for each additional year that a concealed handgun law is in effect, the murder rate declines by 3%. So if a state's had a concealed handgun law in place for 10 years, according to this math, the murder rate drops by 30%. Rape goes down by 2%. So if the handgun law was in effect 10 years, rape would drop 20%. And robberies by over 2% for each year the concealed handgun law is in effect. He says concealed handguns reduce violent crime for two reasons. First, they reduce the number of attempted crimes because criminals are uncertain which potential victims can defend themselves. Now, I'm going to stop right here and I'm going to take a little side note here and I'm going to say, boy, isn't that the truth? I mean, just my state that I live in here in Texas. You got a lot of folks here who really think twice, especially on the streets here, about doing something violent, and especially up close and personal to people here. There's a lot of people here packing. There's a whole lot of people here in Texas that are packing. And this state, and I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and the Dallas-Fort Worth area, since Texas allowed concealed carry, has seen a pretty significant drop. Now, it's not only due to handguns. All right, I'm not going to give handguns completely the credit. All right, but even with long guns, we've seen a big drop in crime, in violent crime, since we instituted our concealed carry laws. I think there might be a little bit of a correlation there. And Mr. Lott says the second reason is that victims who have guns are, ding, 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 you ready for this? They're in a much better position to defend themselves. You've all seen those no weapon signs. I got a friend of mine that runs another survival blog, and she sent me an email wanting to know if it would be a good thing for her to start a website that showed people where in their local area, in other words, a website they could log on to that showed where you are not allowed to carry in your local area. In other words, who's got their businesses or their places posted so that you cannot conceal carry. And she thought that might be a pretty good resource for concealed carry enthusiasts to know where they can go and where they can't. Now let's talk a little bit about no weapon signs. No weapon signs, also in my opinion, I think we should call them no defense signs. Right? Because what it's doing is it's stripping people the right to defend themselves. And what it is I think they also should be called come commit crime here signs. Because it's a huge advertisement to criminals. Hey, there's no weapons here. We don't allow weapons here. We don't allow people the right to defend themselves. So come commit a crime here. No one's defended. Think about that. Now, let me tell you something here about the state of Texas. In the state of Texas, we have a statute. And the statute number is 30-06. I think it's a coincidence. I don't think that they set that up on purpose. I don't know. I'd have to check into that. But it's called the 30-06 sign. Okay? But basically what the 30-06 sign is here in this state, if you want to post your building, your place of business, or whatever, as a place where concealed carry license holders cannot come in here and defend themselves. In other words, if you want to run business away from your place from your business, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, you post a 30-06 sign. Now, a building is not officially posted in the state of Texas unless they have a 30-06 sign. In other words, it clearly defines the statute number 30-06. Now, if somebody just puts one of those cheesy-looking signs, that the big red circle with a line through it, a picture of a gun that says no guns, that doesn't count here. That's not officially posted. I don't know, for some of you who are residents of Texas, I don't know if you knew that or not, but that's the truth. So you got to have a 30-06 sign posted. Well, there's another name for that sign instead of a no weapon sign. It's also, I think, called a no business sign. You know why? It's a proven fact that a lot of business owners that put that sign out there lose a lot of business, because you got a lot of concealed carry license holders that want to go shop there, they want to go buy something there, but they really don't want to take their gun off and leave it in the car while they're in the store, and that's not a real good idea to take your gun off and leave it in the car, especially leaving it in the car loaded. Not a smart idea while you're in the store. Okay, there's a lot of reasons why that's not a smart idea. Theft is one of them. There's a whole bunch of others. So a lot of concealed carry permit holders just simply avoid doing business in those stores. And I get a friend of mine, I have a couple friends of mine that do a really good job, by the way, of letting business owners know, either via email or calling them up and say, hey, you know, I was going to come buy something at your store, but I saw that it wasn't posted. I mean, I saw that it was posted saying that I couldn't carry my gun in there. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I have a legal right and a license to carry my concealed handgun, and you're not allowing me in your place of business, so I'm going to go buy it somewhere else. A lot of stories about business owners taking those signs down because many of them value their wallet more than they value keeping law-abiding citizens with no criminal records from coming into their store with their concealed handgun to defend themselves in case something happens. So again, I think it's called the no business sign. It's the advertisement for criminals, the come do your dirty work here sign, and it's also called the no defense sign. Okay? That's just my opinion there. But John Lott makes a pretty good case here, and I really like that initial point that he made. Now, another question that was asked of him, the interviewer said, well, what's the basis for all of your numbers? Now, this was a while back. All right, but actually these numbers have improved. But I'll tell you what he wrote in 98. He says the analysis is based on data from all 3,054 counties in the United States. This guy did his homework. He studied data for 18 years in over 3,000 counties in the United States, county crime statistics. All right, just it's the facts. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up some current crime statistics that have been calculated through the year 2007. I don't think some of the 2008s have been published yet. They might have, and if I can find them, I'll put them in the show notes as a posted link. But you'll see that some of the numbers improved. The ones I just talked about the percentages of crime that have gone down since states started issuing concealed carry permits. Now, here comes another really good question. The interviewer also asked Mr. Lott this question. Your argument about criminals and deterrence doesn't tell the whole story. Oh, no, you can't be telling us the complete truth, Mr. Lott. Certainly not. Don't statistics show that most people are killed by someone they know? Now, I've heard this many times, and maybe you've heard this many times, and this answer that he gives is fabulous. He says, you're referring to the often cited statistic that 58% of murder victims are killed by either relatives or acquaintances. He says, however, what most people don't understand is that this acquaintance murder, what they classify when they calculate these statistics, what they classify as an acquaintance murder, also includes gang members killing other gang members, drug buyers killing drug pushers, cab drivers killed by their clients that they picked up for the first time, prostitutes who kill their clients, and so on. So acquaintance covers a broad spectrum and a wide range of relationships, but yet it gets classified as an acquaintance murder. He said the vast majority of murders are not committed by previous law-abiding citizens. I mean, come on, folks. You know what? You realize what it takes to get a concealed carry permit? If you have a history of violence and you have records of that, you are not getting a permit. So the vast majority of murders are not committed by law-abiding citizens who have been thoroughly checked out by the FBI and the State Board of Investigation before they got their permit. 90% of adult murders, he says 90% of adult murderers, excuse me, have had criminal records as adults. 90% of them. So it's not so much whether they know you, it's the disposition of the thug that attacks you. That's what contributes to the murder rate, not so much this acquaintance murder. So he made a pretty good case to throw that whole notion right out the window, in my opinion. Then the interviewer gets to the big question. Well, how about children? What about kids? And the interviewer brought up the 1998 incident in Jonesboro, Arkansas, where four kids and a teacher were killed by two schoolboys in Jonesboro. Now, there's been a lot, you know, Columbine, we all remember that too. And a lot of these incidents, they're hideous, they're awful. Make no mistake about it. I'm not saying these are not tragic, tragic incidents, okay? That's not what I'm saying at all. So don't take me the wrong way. Don't think I'm trying to make light of any of those tragedies that happened. But the interviewer asks Mr. Lott, won't tragedies like this increase if more people are allowed to carry guns? Shouldn't this be taken into consideration before making gun ownership laws more lenient? And Mr. Lott's response, another good one, he said, that horrific shooting in Arkansas occurred in one of the few places where having guns was already illegal. A school! All right, what did I just say about no weapons signs? It's an advertisement to criminals. Come do your dirty work here. He said, these laws risk creating situations in which the good guys cannot defend themselves from the bad ones. Duh. And then he went right back to the effect of having what we call shall issue laws on the books. He says when states issued shall issue carry permits, the reduction in crimes have been drastically diminished. He said when states passed these laws, the number of multiple victim shootings declined by 84%. And he said there's no statistical evidence that increasing the number of concealed handguns increases shootings of any kind, whether they're accidental or intentional. Now, let me talk about children here. Let me get away from John Lott's response here, and let me just interject my thoughts here on kids and guns and what you should do about that situation. I think that, first of all, I think the saying, gun-proof your kids instead of kid-proofing your guns, I think that is a huge, huge step. If you're taught, I was taught from the age of 8 years old to respect firearms. I was taught that firearms are very dangerous, very destructive, and firearms are, I was taught when I was about 8 or 9 years old, are really only used for two purposes. One purpose is to hunt and put food on the table, and the other is to kill people in self-defense. And I was giving a very, I was given a very stern, several of them, a very stern talk from my father. And at about the age of 11, I was immediately enrolled in a hunter safety course. And I took three different hunter safety course. And before my father would even let me look at a gun to go out in the field and go hunting with it, it was his requirement that I had to pass all three of those hunter safety courses. And those courses that I took, I'm 47 years old, those courses that I took 36 years ago, those courses still exist and are still being taught. So you parents out there, gun-proof your kids first. You cannot kid-proof a gun. You need to take away the kids' curiosity. And see, that's what happens with children, is they get curious. And when the dangers of the firearm are clearly explained to them, young kids are impressionable. They don't want to be involved with something dangerous. And when you teach them proper safety, and you educate them, and you take away the curious nature, when you take away the temptation that they have to want to play with a firearm, because that's where they get in trouble, is they start playing with them. You know, they think that they're toys. They're not toys. When you teach them that, and you start teaching them at a young age, and you teach them the level of responsibility and the level of respect that they need to have for these instruments of danger, that is, I think, what we need to do to make the biggest amount of progress to keep kids and firearms able to coexist in a safe manner. And just locking your firearms up is not going to do it, folks. Trust me, when your kids get old enough, if they want to figure out how to get to your firearms, they're going to figure out how to do it. But also, I don't think that you should make a decision not to own firearms or carry them just because you have kids in your house. Bad idea. Very bad idea. Because, number one, you're putting your life at risk. All right? Because if you do have a home invasion, or if a disaster does happen and there's looting and there's rioting in the streets, you've just put your whole family at risk because you have no firearm to defend yourself. You realize that? You just basically ripped your family off of probably the one thing that they could use to save their life in a disaster, a calamity, or some type of a home invasion. So don't do that. Just learn the proper methods. And, you know, parents, go take the firearm safety courses with your children. You both learn something. It becomes a family event. Take that curiosity away, and firearms and children will be able to exist in the same place safely. That's my opinion. That's my two cents. You might agree, you might not agree. If you don't agree, if you can give me some good evidence as to why you don't agree, and if you can back it up with some good logic and good facts, send me a comment. I'd like to hear it, and I'll be open-minded, and I may even talk about it on the next show. And of course, if you want to support my opinion and you want to talk about ways that your family and your kids and your firearms have coexisted safely, I'd like to hear some success stories on that too. But that's my side note. That's my tangent. I won't get off on any more of that now. Let's get back to analyzing this interview. So Mr. Lott also went on to answer that question by saying, despite over 200 million guns owned between about 80 or 85 million people. I think it's now about 300 million guns in America that are owned. He said the children killed is much smaller than the number lost through, you ready for this? He said, despite all the gun ownership, the number of kids that are killed is smaller, killed by guns, is smaller than the number of kids killed from bicycle accidents, drowning, or fire. It's not the guns, folks. He says children are 14 times more likely to die from car accidents than from accidents or crimes committed with guns. So the interviewer dropped that question, went to the next one. The next question that they asked him, well, wouldn't allowing concealed weapons increase the incidence of citizens attacking each other in tense situations? For instance, sometimes in traffic jams or accidents, people become very hostile. Well, yeah, that's true. Road rage? Yeah, road rage is definitely prevalent out there. And big cities like I live in, Dallas-Fort Worth area, where there's a lot of traffic jams, yeah, road rage is a big problem. And so the interviewer says, well, what about people screaming and shoving at one another? If they're armed, wouldn't they also shoot each other in the heat of the moment in road rage, for example? And Mr. Lott said, during legislative hearings that most of these states held when they passed their concealed carry laws, the most commonly raised concern involved fears that armed citizens would attack each other in the heat of the moment. The evidence showed that such fears are unfounded, despite millions of people licensed to carry concealed handguns, and many states having these laws for decades. There's only been, at the time of the writing of this article, at that time, there's only been one case where a person with a concealed carry permit used a gun after a traffic accident. And even in that one, that case where that person used the gun, it was in self-defense. So I thought that was a very good answer. He blew that question out of the water too. So then the interviewer continues. Then the next question asked, well, what about violence against women? Won't more guns on the streets put more women at risk? And John Lott says murder rates decline when either more women or more men carry concealed handguns. It doesn't matter. He said that the women being able to carry concealed handguns reduces the murder rate for women by about 3 to 4 times more than it does for a man carrying a concealed handgun. So, the next question, well, aren't you playing into people's fears, right? Aren't you playing into people's fears and prejudices? Don't politicians pass these shall-issue concealed carry laws just to pacify middle-class white suburbanites who are anxious about the encroachment of urban minority crime? Oh, gosh, man. If I was Mr. Lott, I would have probably thrown up when that question was asked. In fact, he might have. Who knows? But he responded, he says, well, I'm not going to speculate about the motives of criminals. But he said the actual results tell us a different story. High crime urban areas and neighborhoods with large minority populations have the greatest reduction in violent crime when citizens are legally allowed to carry concealed handguns. So he pointed to the evidence. The evidence suggested otherwise. So the interviewer hits him with the next question. Well, what about other countries? It's often argued that, like Great Britain, for example, has a lower violent crime rate than the USA because guns are, well, now they're impossible for citizens to obtain and own. And Mr. Lott says, well, the data analyzed in his book is from the United States. He said many countries such as Switzerland, New Zealand, Finland, and Israel have high gun ownership rates and, ready? Ding, 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 ding. Low crime rates, while other countries have low gun ownership rates and either low or high crime rates. So he says it's difficult to obtain the data from other countries, and it's inconsistent, and he said the data can't be trusted on. He said even the cross-country polling data on gun ownership is too difficult to assess because ownership is underreported in a lot of countries, where it's illegal. So he said you really can't rely on the data. That's what he's trying to say. It's inaccurate, it's not consistent, and you can't really make that argument because his data was based on U.S. data and he wasn't able to pull it from other countries. But again, I think a lot of these countries that that have the no gun ownership rules, I think they're playing with fire in the long run. I really do. I think they're putting up in their country a huge no weapons sign, and I told you earlier what I thought of those no weapons signs. And then the next question asked of Mr. Lott was an interesting one. He says, well, this is certainly controversial. Yeah, no kidding. And there are certain to be counter-arguments from those who disagree with you. So what do you say to the people who disagree with you after they read this book? And he says, well, some people do use guns in horrible ways. It's true, they do. But other people use guns to prevent horrible things from happening to them. The ultimate question that concerns us all is, I love this, will law-abiding citizens, will allowing law-abiding citizens to own guns save lives? And he said that question can only be answered by looking at the data, by looking at the facts, which he so cleverly and masterfully laid out in this interview and in his book, More Guns, Less Crime. Good book. Get it and read it. So my summation on this, before I get into the Walther PPS and a little bit about long guns, is this. You have to look at common sense. And unfortunately, common sense just ain't so common anymore these days. And this issue of concealed handguns, especially handguns, it gets to be a very emotional issue, in my opinion. And I think it's far too emotional. And, of course, it's political. Let's just face it, it's political. You got a lot of people right now, a lot of politicians that want to pander to the anti-gun lobby. Now, I think recently we've seen a lull, we've seen a quieting of the gun restriction sabers being rattled. But make no mistake about it, it's going to come back. But right now, it's interesting. I think all the freaking out and the panicking that at least American citizens went through when Barack Obama was elected president, people panicked. People thought he was going to shut down gun ownership, he was going to shut down the sales, shut down ownership altogether. And so prices skyrocketed on both guns and ammo. There was a lot of panic buying going on. Gun manufacturers couldn't keep up. Ammo was in ridiculously short supply. We're seeing a quell in that. We're seeing a reduction in that now. Availability is getting better on both firearms and ammo. Prices are starting to come back down. I think people are starting to realize that Obama's got a lot bigger fish to fry right now than gun control. Now, let's not get too complacent. Folks, make sure your members, you keep your NRA membership up to date. Make sure you're members of organizations that you feel are worthwhile to protect your Second Amendment rights, because they're going to continue to try to assault them. Right now, like I said, I think we've got a quieting in them, but I think the assault on those rights is going to come back. They always do. They always keep trying. It's just another issue that they can start rattling the sabers on, so you got to be vigilant. But I think right now we're kind of fortunate. And I think it's because these statistics are starting to show themselves for what they are, and that is they are the truth. These statistics are starting to prove over and over again that, yes, handguns do save lives. More gun, less crime is the truth. All right. Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about a gun called the Walther PPS. If you know anything about guns, I think you've heard of Walther. Probably the most famous Walther pistol is the PPK, and the reason that's popular, it's the gun James Bond carried. I forgot what movie it was. I think it was Dr. No, but I'm not sure. He had a little 32 caliber Beretta, I think it was. And the special agent that was giving him his gun said, give me that, we're going to issue you a new one, we're going to issue you this Walther PPK. And it was funny because he was carrying a Beretta 32 and they issued him a Walther PPK in 380. And he says, Bond, you're going to carry this. It's more reliable and it has more stopping power. Isn't that interesting? The 380, well, of course, I guess compared to a 32, yeah, it did have more stopping power. And he said the Walther was more reliable than the Beretta. Oh, boy, would that ever start a huge argument if that happened today, huh? But anyway, Walther became popular because Bond carried for a long time a Walther PPK. That's a good gun, too. Walther recently decided to go after the thin is in market. And I got to tell you, you know, from carrying handguns for a long time now, being thin and light is definitely a huge plus. If you listened to my podcast and my review on the Car Arms pistols that I just recently did, I made a big issue about how having it thin and light is critical. It's just so much more comfortable. Well, technology now has really advanced, and Walther's always been a pretty high-tech firearms manufacturer. That's been one of their claim to fame. You know, good old German engineering, pretty high-tech stuff. The Walther PPS, you can't ignore it. You got to take a serious look at this handgun, and I'm going to tell you why. First of all, the biggest reason is they've made this gun very Glock-like. All right? Now, if you're a Glock hater, you might think, ah, I don't want any part of it. Hold on. All right, Glock-like. They've taken the Glock and they've really gone a step further with it. First of all, the grip angle on the Walther PPS. And by the way, I'm speaking from experience here. I haven't purchased one yet because I only buy my firearms with cash. I don't use credit, so I'm in the market of saving for one. But I went to the range and I ran 200 rounds through the rental Walther PPS 9mm that they had in there, and I absolutely loved it. Now, this is a gun that the range officer said that probably had about 1,500 rounds through it, so the trigger was smoothed up real nicely. But I'll get to that a little bit later. Anyway, they made it Glock-like. I noticed right away that the grip angle was much better than the Glock. If you're a 1911 fan, you're going to find that the angle, that the way this pistol sits in your hand is much more 1911-ish. But what they took from Glock is they still gave it a good low bore axis. Now, you remember I talked about the low bore axis? In other words, the bore of the barrel, you know, when you're holding the gun, it sits down low. The closer to your hand the barrel is, the more control you typically have over the firearm. So go back and listen to that show. I think it was episode 8 or 9, I talked about that. So Walther kept the bore axis low, made the grip feel nice with a good angle to it, and there's some very good texturing on this grip that's done by the factory. The grip is not slick at all. You know, it's a polymer-framed gun. So, yeah, I guess you could call it a plastic gun, okay? It's a plastic, fantastic gun, but it's very, very well engineered. The grip, you don't slip. I tried to make this gun slip, and even when I was shooting, you know, I was actually shooting some CCI Blazer rounds through it, and it ate up the CCI Blazer rounds very well. The aluminum case stuff that jams in a lot of other guns, this Walther fed with no problem, and the range was selling it, so I ran it through the gun. Now, CCI happens to be typically loaded a little hotter than most factory ammunition, and the recoil felt fine, and the gun wouldn't slip. It just didn't slip in my hands. And then when the gun was unloaded, after I triple checked it, I tried moving it around a lot in my hand, and it would move, but not nearly as easy as a Glock, or even moved a little bit less than a 1911 when I held it in my hand and tried to move it around. So I really liked that feature of it. The other thing I liked about the Walther is I asked the range officer if I could field strip it, and he said sure. He actually stood next to me and watched me field strip it. It takes down very easily. It takes down very much like a Glock. And the thing I noticed immediately when I field stripped it is the recoil spring. The recoil is a double sprung recoil spring. In other words, there's two springs in there, very much like the Glock Model 26. Walther borrowed this concept from Glock. And that really reduces muzzle flip and recoil because it's got to compress two springs when that round is fired. So I really liked that feature, and it was a metal recoil, a metal guide rod, excuse me, which I kind of like that feature as well. And I noticed the ease of field stripping. Now this is very important, folks, because one of the things I'm a firm believer that keeps people from cleaning their guns a lot is a reluctance to take them apart, and it's too hard. It's too difficult to field strip, so they don't like to do it a lot. And this is where 1911 shooters really get in trouble, is because, let's face it, sometimes a 1911, especially for new shooters, is frustrating to field strip, especially the small ones, little 3-inch models. Those things are very frustrating. I forgot to cover that when I did my my analysis of 1911s, but they're a pain in the rear end to field strip, and a lot of people just don't want to do them, so they don't clean them. And then what happens if you don't clean a fine gun like a 1911? They jam. Not as the case with the Walther. So I really like that aspect of it. The other thing I liked about it is the factory sights. So many pistols are put out, and Glock is, here's a big disadvantage of Glock, I think I covered this. Their factory sights suck, folks. They're just horrible, horrible sights, and they're made of plastic. Not the Walther. The Walther has very nice, here's what I like. They're three-dot sights, all right? But the three-dot sights means that there's two dots in the rear, one in the front. You got to line the dots up and put the center dot on your target. They're not distracting. When you look through the sights, they're not distracting. A lot of three-dot sights are distracting, and the sight you got to focus on is your front sight. You know, your front sight, front sight, front sight. You want to be an accurate shooter? You remember the three most important rules of accurate shooting. The three most important rules are front sight, front sight, front sight. Okay? That might be a subject for a whole other show. But it's real easy to focus on that front sight and not get your eyes confused and your brain confused by the two sights in the rear. And the other thing is there's a huge notch in the rear sight, which gives you plenty of space. So when you're lining up that that front sight, you got a lot of real estate inside that notch. Now, the benefit of that, unlike a Glock, where that front sight basically drops in that stupid little white bucket of the rear sight of a Glock, and there's not much space there, it helps you line your shot better. It helps you get a better sight picture. The sight picture using the Walther PPS is fabulous. It's wonderful sights on this pistol. Can't say anything bad about them. The only little negative I could see about the sights is that right now, until this gun gains more popularity, there, I believe, is only one manufacturer of night sights. And they're very expensive. They're like about $135, and there's only one place to get them. Walther or Smith & Wesson, who does the service. By the way, Smith & Wesson does all the service on this pistol here in the United States. They don't sell night sights for it. So that's kind of a disadvantage. Maybe. Some people don't think that not having night sights are a disadvantage. Gabe Suarez makes a very good argument against having night sights, basically how you don't need them. And I'm going to try to find the article that he put on his forum about just using regular black-on-black sights is sufficient. Now, some of you might be saying, well, I don't know if I agree with that. What happens if you're shooting somebody at night? Well, I think if I can summarize Gabe's article, basically what he said was that if there's enough light to see your target, there's probably going to be enough light to at least see your front sight, even if it's black. Now, on this Walther PPS, the front sight is a big white dot. Alright, so you're probably going to be able to pick that up, even in a dim light situation. And you got to remember, a lot of self-defense with a handgun, a lot of it's point shooting anyway. Alright, a lot of it is you're not even going to use your sight. Sometimes in the heat of the moment, things happen so fast, you're at close range, you're just getting that gun out of the holster, you're pointing it at the target, and you're pulling the trigger. Especially if your encounter is 5 yards or less. And you should practice that, by the way. You should practice shooting without actually looking at the sights and putting rounds on target. 95% of the time, that's probably how you're going to end up using a handgun. And if you do have the ability to get a good sight picture, it's quite likely not going to be in the pitch black. And if especially if it's used in home defense, you may even be able to grab a flashlight real quick. And, of course, this has a light rail. So you can put, if you're using this gun as a home defense gun, you can put a gun light on it. So you can flick that light on real quickly, and then, of course, that negates the need for night sights. So it's really not that big of a deal, and I think it's only a matter of time as this gun gets more popular. You're going to see more night sights being made for it. So if you choose to put that option on there, it's going to get more popular. But I tell you what, not having night sights isn't going to stop me from carrying it. That's for sure. But I guess, you know, some people might think that's a negative. So thought I'd throw that out there. There it is. Now, the other really positive thing that I liked about this gun, very much like the Carr Arms pistols, everything fits together very tightly. So very tight tolerance, which provides real good accuracy. Now, Walther states in the manual that I think there's like a 500 or 600 round break-in period. So you may have a few failures during the first 500 or 600 rounds. The range officer said they had a few. And they had to just remind people that it was a new gun and eventually it was going to smooth out and be ultra reliable. Well, like I said, there's probably 1,500 rounds or better, something like that, through the one that I rented at the range. It was flawless, folks. It was absolutely flawless. I didn't have one single problem with it, and the trigger smoothed out nicely. But some folks might think that that break-in period is a negative. I mean, let's face it, 500 rounds, even 9mm, with the cost of ammo these days, isn't cheap. I don't think that's a negative. Tell you why. You've heard me say it over and over again. I think some of you know what I'm about to say. You know what's coming. You need to give every pistol you own a 1,000-round trigger job. You gotta shoot the doggone thing 1,000 rounds before you can call yourself proficient with any handgun. In any handgun, I don't care which one it is, it's going to smooth out and quite likely become more reliable after 1,000 rounds. The parts are going to break in. The trigger, especially on this Walther, was really smooth on this range rental gun. So I don't think it's a negative. I think it's a positive. I think shooting 500 rounds, first of all, improves your shooting skills. It gives you the much-needed practice. Like I said earlier, nothing worse than somebody that carries that doesn't have a decent amount of practice. So I think that break. I personally think, my personal humble opinion, is that the break-in period is a good thing. But some people think that's a negative. Some people want to be able to pull it out of the box and it be completely ultra-reliable without one failure. Can't guarantee that about the Walther PPS. But the engineering on this gun is superb. When you see it, you'll know what I mean. Everything fits together nice and tight, real good accuracy. It's only about a 3.25-inch barrel, approximately. But the accuracy with this short barrel is amazing. Now, let's talk a little bit about accuracy. Please realize, folks, it's the sight radius. In other words, the distance between the rear sight and the front sight that contributes to accuracy more so than barrel length. Right? Just so happens that longer barrel guns typically, by nature, have a longer sight radius. Makes sense, right? Well, this little Walther PPS has a pretty decent sight radius. A lot longer sight radius than my Carr Arms PM9. Even though the barrel length on the Walther is about the same as my Carr, it's got a longer sight radius. Therefore, it provides much better accuracy. So I really liked that part. At one point, I backed the target up to about 10 yards, had no problem making about, I think it was 18 or 19 straight headshots at 10 yards. Taking my time, wasn't rapid fire. So I'll go ahead and I'll say that. I wasn't rapid firing them. I was taking a good second or two between those shots, making sure I got a good sight picture and gently squeeze, not pull the trigger, but about 18 headshots in a row at 10 yards. I'll take that, folks. That's acceptable enough accuracy for me. Now, Another advantage, the Walther PPS has interchangeable backstraps. Now, the one I rented at the range had a large backstrap, which was fine for me because I've got pretty good size hands and long fingers. But there is a real small backstrap, so small-handed shooters can switch it out and leave the small one on there. That's a real good feature. Guns with interchangeable backstraps, really good idea. Something that Glock just hasn't seemed to embrace, so a lot of people have had to take their Glocks in to get the grips, the grip size reduced. Definitely not a need for that with the Walther. Now, you could say that one of the disadvantages of the Walther is that it's so thin. It's so thin that if you're not concentrating on making sure you have a good grip on this thing, that you could throw your shooting accuracy off. If you're used to grabbing, it's hard to explain why that happens, but if you're used to grabbing a gun with a fat, wide grip, so Glock shooters or Springfield XD shooters, I'm going to warn you, if you're used to grabbing a double stack gun, concentrate on using a proper firing grip when you grab the Walther PPS. It'll just take you a little bit of training. Like I said, when you're done with that 1,000-round trigger job, you won't have any problem with that. But the positive of that thinness is so nice and easy to conceal. Also, there's three different types of magazines for this gun. Here's something else I like about it. Three different types of magazines. My car arms only came with two different types of magazines. And when I say type, I mean there's an 8-round, a 7-round, and a 6-round magazine that you can get for the Walther. Now, Walther's a little bit cheap. For the price of this gun, about $650, they only give you one mag. That's a disadvantage. And I think mags are about $40 a piece. So this is not a budget gun, but I definitely would tell you that if you do not own a gun, and you're looking for a gun that you can use for both self-defense and ease of concealed carry, I think it's worth your money saving the time to get this Walther PPS. It also comes in 40 caliber for you 40 caliber fans. I really do. I really think it's worth saving up the money. It's only a couple hundred dollars more than buying a Glock, and yes, the magazines are more expensive, but I think it's worth it, especially if this is your first handgun. And I'm going to tell you why, because it's so ridiculously easy to shoot and so incredibly easy for someone to learn. No manual safety, just point it and pull the trigger and shoot. It's got a little trigger safety, very much like a Glock, so you've got to have that little protrusion in the trigger depressed as well to be able to fire the weapon, so it prevents the problem of it getting snagged on clothing, for example, and firing by accident. It makes it much more difficult for that to happen. But the fact that it comes with three magazines, or excuse me, that you can get three different magazines, so you can carry it with an 8-round magazine. 8 plus 1, so you can have 9 rounds on board. And then you can have a medium-sized magazine that holds 7, and then you can use a flush-fitting magazine. You can actually pocket this gun if you've got cargo shorts or cargo pants with decent-sized pockets. Put that 6-round flush magazine in there, and it's so thin, it's not a whole lot bigger than my Car Arms PM9. And the trigger on this Walther is so much better than my car. I thought my car had a nice smooth trigger. The Walther, once it's broken in, it beats the car trigger hands down. So again, the fact that you can have three magazines and the trigger smooths out, I gotta tell you folks, there's not a lot to dislike about the Walther. I have pointed out some negatives, so I tried to give a pretty objective review on this gun. So it's not all positive, but there sure are a lot of positives. Next time you go to a range that has a pretty good selection of guns, check out the Walther PPS. I did not get a chance to shoot the 40. I've talked to people that have. They said it has a significant amount of more recoil than the 9mm. That's to be expected. This 9mm was a very soft shooter, folks. It's the softest shooting compact 9mm I've ever shot, and I've shot a lot of them. So, Walther's done their homework in this little thing. Highly recommended. I certainly would not feel underprotected with the Walther PPS. And so, with that, I know I said I was going to get into long guns today. I'm looking at my timer, and we've already gone a considerable amount of time. So I'm going to save the long guns for the next episode. But I promise that's coming next. I'm going to talk about shotguns, rifles, if you should own them, why you should own them, what I think the circumstances would be where you'd ever have to use one, what are the advantages and disadvantages of them, and there's a lot of differences of opinions on long guns. I happen to be a handgun fan, but I got a few long guns, so again, I'm going to get into that next. I promise I will. But thank you for listening to episode 11 of the Handgun World Show. I hope you enjoyed more guns, less crime, and I hope you enjoyed my brief review of the Walther PPS, fine little handgun. So once again, thanks for listening. This is Bob Main. I'm your host. You just listened to episode 11 of the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. They're just too heavy. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.